Hello and welcome to Skywatch TV. I'm Joe Artis Horn. As we speak, people all over Western civilization and throughout the world have become increasingly violent toward their fellow man. An unexplainable rage seems to have overtaken many segments of society. People willing to take to the streets in protest, burn buildings down, brutally attack total strangers without obvious provocation, and more. The question is, why have people become so violent? Is there a biblical answer for the rise in violence and dissent that we're seeing across our world right now? As a part of Defender Publishing's Fall 2022 virtual conference, Dr. Thomas Horn presented a special report entitled The Angel of Death versus the Gift of Life. In this presentation, Dr. Thomas Horn talks about his personal experience speaking with several violent criminals who disclosed to him directly that they believed they were being directed by an evil entity or a voice to commit violent atrocities. Dr. Horn connects these revelations to the recent rise of horrendous crimes that we're seeing break out all over the world today. From the deepest caverns of the human psyche to the Old Testament, from the potential rise of the Antichrist and the Nephilim to end times epigenetics. Here is part one of Dr. Horn's special report on the angel of death versus the gift of life.
I want to talk today about the angel of death versus the gift of life. And I chose this topic because of all that we see going on in our culture and around the world today, where there just seems to be so much provocation, anger, dissent, hostilities. So I want to begin by asking, what in the other world is going on? You had a 14-year-old boy and a young girl of the same age who were recently charged with the murder of a 73-year-old senior citizen who they beat to death with a traffic cone in Philadelphia. Around the same time, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos fatally shot 19 students and two teachers and wounded 17 other people at the Robb Elementary School in Texas. That same day, he shot his grandmother in the face at her home. And then there was 21-year-old Robert Cramo, who now faces charges of first-degree murder in connection with the Highland Park, Illinois' July 4th parade, killing 7 people and wounding dozens more. An investigative report by Gateway Pundit uncovered that Cramo had connections with the occult that could indicate he was being guided by unseen forces, such as I wish to discuss in this presentation, and its connection to end times prophecy. This list of people, including kids killing others, has literally exploded worldwide, as most of you know, and just in recent years. But my question is, what is behind this? Is it all mental disease? Is it only dark spiritual influences? Is it end times developments leading to arrival of Antichrist, what my late friend Russ Dizdar called the Black Awakening? Or is it all of the above? Another of my late friends, radio minister Dr. Noah Hutchings, one of the last conversations we had, he was rehearsing how some of the most famous convicts in the United States over the years have sought spiritual guidance and prayers from the Southwest Radio Ministries. These include David Berkowitz, who is also known as the Son of Sam, John Hinckley Jr., who attempted to assassinate President Ronald Reagan, Charles Tex Watson, the former member of the Charles Manson family who was convicted of first-degree murder in the 1969 deaths of Sharon Tate, Abigail Folger, Lino and Rosemary LaBianca, and others. The good ministry of the Southwest Radio Church has, for a lot of years, provided books, inspirational calendars, and other materials to prison chaplains, and we've helped them in that effort too in hopes of leading prisoners to salvation. And as a result, Southwest Radio Church and we too are often sought for counsel by desperate souls seeking forgiveness. Now, I'm including this information in the beginning of this presentation because whereas Satan is identified in the Bible as a murderer and has been since the beginning, according to John 8:44, I believe that deliverance from his clutches and forgiveness of sins committed under his influence are available through Jesus Christ. So if one were to ask those felons that I just mentioned how their life of crime began for which they now seek spiritual forgiveness, they often point to a darkness which is increasingly rampant in today's cultural romance with all things occultic. These men have to us described how it started in their youth when they somehow sought out and began listening to the angel of death. Now, in an article for Raiders News Network, now known as Skywatch TV, that I wrote nearly two decades ago, I attempted to illustrate what can happen when taking in the whispers of this dark fallen angel, this spiritual influence. The feature that I wrote was called Inside the Violent Mind of the Angel of Death. And in it, I had discussed how on Monday, March 21, 2005, 17-year-old Jeffrey Weese, a junior at Red Lake High School in Red Lake, Minnesota, had gone on a shooting spree that killed 9 people and wounded 15 others at the school. He then turned a gun on himself and committed suicide. Those shootings were the worst attack of that type in the nation since the 1999 Columbine school shooting in Littleton, Colorado. A preliminary investigation indicated that the suspect there apparently first shot his grandparents, and then he went to the school where he allegedly shot a security guard, and then exchanged fire with police officers and opened fire on other students before killing himself. That was all in a report that had been filed in various news agencies at the time. It identified who the teachers were, who the wounded students were, and all according to the initial and follow-up police investigations. So I had written about that, though, trying to identify, in some cases, what might the spirit, what might the influence, what the Bible calls the angel of death or Satan as a murderer from the beginning, how might that express itself? And why would some people have almost an admiration for persons like Adolf Hitler, whose voice would fill a young person's mind with such kind of violent intent? Now, in 1998, when defense attorneys argued that 17-year-old Kip Kinkle, who, like Jeffrey Weese, entered his school on a shooting rampage, why he should not spend the rest of his life in prison, they said it was because Kinkle was hearing voices telling him to commit murders. In fact, during the sentence hearings, Dr. Richard J. Conkle pointed out that holes in what is normally a smooth surface of Kinkle's brain revealed conditions consistent with schizophrenia. When defense attorney Mark Sabat asked if that would make a person more susceptible to a psychotic episode, Conkle responded that indeed it would. Kinkle went on to plead guilty to 4 counts of murder and 26 counts of attempted murder in the May 1998 shooting rampage in Springfield, Oregon. Kinkle's parents and 2 students at the Thurston High School died as a result of the attack, and 25 other students were wounded. But at the time, Kinkle said, he said, "My dad was sitting at the breakfast bar, and the voices said, 'Shoot him.' I had no choice. The voices said, 'I had no choice.'" Now, Kinkle testified that after he killed his parents, he was instructed by the voices to go to school and kill everybody there. He said murderous voices began speaking to him at age 12 when he got off the school bus one day and he was looking at a bush, and the bush said, "You have to kill everyone, everyone in the world." Kinkle believes that the voices came from the devil or a satellite or from a computer chip implanted in his head by the government. And like Kinkle, Jeffrey Weese also felt compelled to shed the blood of innocent people when he was hearing voices, and then he killed himself. But the question is this: how could such notions enter the mind of a young boy? Perhaps the same way notorious son of Sam Keller, David Berkowitz, told me that bloodthirsty voices commanded him to kill. According to Berkowitz, a man that I know and a convert of Christianity, a 6,000-year-old demon named Sam communicated through his neighbor's black Labrador retriever, instructing him to carry out the murders. Berkowitz was also subsequently diagnosed as having paranoid schizophrenia. This is a disease in which the person often hears pejorative or threatening voices separate from their own. And both Kinkle and Berkowitz were known to read pornographic and violent depictions of torture and murder. It appears from the initial evidence that Weiss enjoyed the ponderings of other mass murderers as well. Now, I want to make this point. Schizophrenia is an accepted diagnosis of mental disorder, and I do not underestimate the positive contribution of such science. That said, many Christians, including Christian psychologists, believe the causes of violence in people suffering physical and mental illness can, in some cases, also be connected to violent images and stories in popular media. Some believe that curable and incurable conditions like schizophrenia should be approached, therefore, both scientifically and spiritually during diagnosis and treatment. Now, this presupposes a psychological influence of supernatural evil in some cases, and applies literally a interpretation of the words of Jesus that the evil one is a murderer from John 8:44. Satan's violent auto-suggestions can influence the mind that rejects the voice of God and fill that mind with envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice, says Romans 1:29. Early cultures often interpreted these difficult psychological expressions through dark metaphysics. For instance, in Greece, Dionysus was the intoxicating god of unbridled human passion. He was the presence that is otherwise defined as the craving within man that longs to let itself go and to give itself over to evil human desires. So what a Christian might resist as the evil thoughts of the carnal man, the followers of Dionysus embraced as the incarnate power his promptings, which would in the next life, according to their myth, liberate mankind from the constraints of this present world and from the customs that sought to define respectability through a person's obedience to moral law. But until that day come, worshippers of Dionysus attempted to bring themselves into union with their god through ritual casting off of the bonds of sexual denial and primal constraint by seeking to attain a higher state of ecstasy, the uninhibited rituals of ecstasy, which is Greek for outside the body, supposedly brought followers of Dionysus into a supernatural condition that enabled them to escape the temporary limitations of the body and mind, and thus to achieve a state of enthusiasmos, which we bring the word enthusiasm from, which is outside the body and inside the god. In this sense, Dionysus represented a dichotomy within the Greek religion, as the primary maxim of the Greek culture was one of moderation or nothing too extreme. And yet Dionysus embodied the absolute extreme in that he sought to inflame the forbidden passions and murderous thoughts of the human mind. Interestingly, as most students of psychology will understand, that actually gave Dionysus a stronger allure among many Greeks who otherwise tried in so many ways to suppress and control the wild and secret lusts of the human mind. However, Dionysus resisted every such effort and, according to myth, visited a terrible madness upon those who tried to deny him his free expression. This Dionysic idea of mental disease resulting from the suppression of secret inner desires, especially aberrant sexual desires, was later reflected in the atheistic teachings of Sigmund Freud. Therefore, Freudianism might actually be called the grandchild of the cult of Dionysus. Conversely, The person who gave himself over to the will of Dionysus was rewarded with unlimited psychological and physical delights. Now, these mythical systems of mental punishments and or physical rewards based on resistance to and or submission to Dionysus were both symbolically and literally illustrated in the cult rituals of the Bacchae, or the female participants of the Dionysic mysteries.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have to take a very quick break, but when we return, Dr. Thomas Horn will continue his presentation, talking about the followers of Dionysus and exploring the violent genetic connection to humans in our world today.
There exists an ancient prophecy about a great burning mountain that falls from the sky, bringing devastation to the world, and the signs of its coming have now appeared.
It's racing toward our planet at this very moment. It cannot be stopped, and it's carrying the secret of America's, the world's, and your tomorrow.
When I shared what God had revealed to me about a worldwide destruction set for only a few years from now, some people responded with disbelief, and some are terrified. Revelation 8 is unfolding as we speak, bringing not only wanton destruction, but also an ancient messenger heralding the arrival of the Great Tribulation period, just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. A prophesied aeon that some people call the Great Tribulation period. Whether they want it or not, all of those on earth at this time are going to be forced to heed the warning of the messenger.
In the new documentary film, Ragnarok, Humanity's Last Stand, visionary filmmaker Josh Peck takes you on a journey through the ancient prophecy from the Book of Revelation about a burning mountain that falls from the sky, bringing devastation to the world, and what scientists and NASA have to say about it. In this explosive documentary film, you will learn how the Wormwood Prophecy connects to our modern age, whether the coming asteroid Apophis could be the harbinger of destruction, the science, history, and prophecies surrounding asteroid impact, Dr. Thomas Horn's full in-time vision of destruction, what NASA is saying about Apophis, and what we can do about this threat. But that's not all. We're also including Ragnarok, Mountains of Judgment, where you will take a deep dive into the prophecy and science behind asteroids and how this relates to the coming space rock named after the Egyptian god of chaos, Apophis. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of over $75. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So uncover the prophecies of destruction and learn the mysteries of the last days. This collection is available only through SkyWatch TV, so don't delay. Available now at SkyWatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
As the Bacchae women migrated in frenzied hillside groups, they would dress transvestite in fawn skins and accompanied by screaming and music and dancing and bloodletting and all kinds of licentious behavior. For instance, when a baby animal was too young and lacking in instinct to sense the danger of the approaching Bacchae women and run away from the revelers, it would be picked up and suckled by nursing mothers who participated in the hillside rituals. However, when older animals sought to escape the marauding Bacchae, they were considered resistant to the will of Dionysus and were literally torn apart and eaten alive as a part of the fevered rituals. Human participants were sometimes subjected to the same orgiastic cruelty, as the rule of the cult was anything goes, including rape and other acts of interpersonal violence. Later versions of that ritual were known as the Bacchanalia, and that expanded to include pedophilia, male revelers, and perversions of sexual behavior, which were often worse between men than they were between men and women. But any creature that dared to resist such perversion of Dionysus was subjected to what was called sparagmos, which means to be torn apart, and omophagia, which means to be consumed raw. In 410 BC, Euripides wrote of the bloody rituals of the Bacchae in his famous play, The Bacchantes. Bacchantes, he said, with hands that bore no weapon of steel, attacked our cattle as they browsed. Then wouldst thou have seen Agave mastering some sleek lowing calf, while others rent the heifers limb from limb. Before thy eyes there would have been hurling of ribs and hooves this way and that, and strips of flesh, all blood bedabbled, dripped as they hung from the pine branches. Even wild bulls that glared but now with rage along their horns found themselves tripped up, dragged down to earth by countless maidens' hands, end quote. Now, Euripides went on to describe how Pentheus, the king of Thebes, was also torn apart and eaten alive by his own mother, as according to the play, she fell under the spell of Dionysus. Now, this tearing apart and eating alive of a sacrificial victim may refer to the earliest history of the murderous voice of Satan, an ancient and violent call idea existing since the dawn of paganism, stipulated that by eating an enemy or an animal alive, or by drinking their blood or consuming their heart, a person might somehow capture the essence or the soul strength of the victim. The earliest Norwegian huntsmen believed that too, and they drank the blood of bears in an effort to capture their physical strength. Even East African Maasai warriors at one time also practiced homophagia, and they sought to gain the strength of the wild by drinking the blood of lions. Human victims were even treated that way by Arabs before Muhammad, and headhunters of the East Indies practiced homophagia in an effort to capture the essence of their enemies. Today, homophagia is practiced by certain voodoo sects as well as by cult Satanists. Eating human flesh and drinking human blood among them as an attempt to become one with the devoured is in many cases actually a demonization of the Eucharist or the Holy Communion. But sparagmos and homophagia, as practiced by the followers of Dionysus, was not an attempt of transubstantiation, as in the Catholic Eucharist, nor of consubstantiation, as in the Lutheran Communion, nor yet of a symbolic ordinance, as in the fundamentalist denominations and evangelical denominations, all of which have as a common goal the elevating of the worshiper into a sacramental communion with God. The objective of the Bacchae was the opposite. The frenzied dance, the thunderous song, the licentious behavior, the murderous activity, all of these were actually efforts on the part of the Bacchae to capture the voice of the god Dionysus and to bring him down into an incarnated rage within mankind. So the idea was not one of Holy Communion, but of possession by the spirit of Dionysus. Now, besides mythology and ancient literature, could there even be what we call an evil gene behind some of this current activity? I want to mention that modern scientists are increasingly now believing that genetics play a greater role in human and animal behavior than was previously believed, and that this might include a kind of evil genetic combination that leads to lower inhibitions involving criminal activity and murder. There was an article not long ago by the Florida State University that was actually titled The Evil Gene. Frank Stevenson wrote and considered research from his university, as well as the University of Connecticut, where scientists are analyzing now the DNA of spree killers. The first line in Stevenson's paper suggests what the professors are looking for when it asks, quote, could a monster be swimming in the human gene pool, end quote. The good researcher approached his study from a Darwinian foundation, unfortunately, but he stated, quote, in ascending the evolutionary ladder, humans obviously fail to inherit from their hairy forebears inhibitions against using lethal force against members of their own species. The bizarre ghoul factor of sadistic psychopaths like Ted Bundy aside, humans' historic willingness to slaughter each other wholesale in war and genocidal efforts offers compelling evidence to some scientists that in the genome of some humans lies a fully armed biochemical code for the gamut of aggression from kicking the dog to killing the wife, end quote. Now, in tandem with Stevenson's speculation about an evil biochemical code, recent years have produced considerable advances in DNA research, with one of the more popular new fields called behavioral epigenetics. This is the darling of genetic studies, my biologist friend Sharon Gilbert told me. It seeks to examine and to understand the role that genetics play in shaping animal and human behavior, cognition, personality, and mental health. Epigenetics may occur during life or begin in the womb when chemical changes brought on by the mother's activity affect the genetics and therefore perhaps the future behavior of the child. That those modifications may become heritable and pass from one generation to the next has some scientists wondering if evil genetics or toxic combinations of specific genes may be linked to aggression and antisocial behavior in the succeeding generations of some families. And if so, this raises an intriguing question that I'm not going to take time to develop here, but it has to do with bloodlines, and a second question that I will pose regarding the potential for a blueprint or a special genetic combination that could exist in which individuals can be programmed or reprogrammed to act in defiance of normal human consciousness, or having a soul, as the Bible would call it. Now, not to get too far off subject here, but this appears to have been the estate of the Nephilim, who were genetically manufactured or altered by fallen angels, which are depicted in ancient records as bloodthirsty, violent enemies of God's people who never once had a conflict of consciousness or sought forgiveness for their brutality. Genetically engineered with a specific cellular combination by powerful fallen angels, who the Sumerians, by the way, called flying geniuses, these remarkable living constructs, not made in the image of God, were specifically designed for demonic inhabitation. But did the Nephilim also represent a repeatable, dark, molecular model?
Ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we're all out of time this week, but join us next week as Dr. Thomas Horn finishes his report on the angel of death versus the gift of life, where he will further reveal who the entities driving a murderous hatred of humanity really are. Keep your eyes on the prize, which is Jesus Christ. We'll be back.